another episode of Magic with Zuby. I'm joined here today with a special guest, Bryce. And today's main topic is going to be magic finance. And basically going on about, you know, if you're just wanting to start getting into magic finance. So usually, you know, Bryce, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Like I said, my name is Bryce Jeffcoat. I am a magic player, obviously. I kind of dabble in, I guess I'm a more casual magic finance person. I wouldn't be what you consider hardcore, like into it by any means, but it's more of a self-sustaining thing for me.
Okay. So it's sort of like what helps you keep in the game without trying to spend too much money?
Right. It's basically spending as little of my actual money as possible while still, I guess, playing Magic.
Yeah.
As much as possible.
Yeah, I probably need to start learning to do that. Because, yeah, my wife sees the bills sometimes and just like, what did you spend? Just,
yep.
You know.
Well, you see.
But, all right, so I don't know if you've been following the news in Magic, but I'm sure you've seen the Eternal Masters has been announced.
I have.
Yeah. And that looks pretty exciting. I mean, the price tag on it does not look exciting, but the
no.
Yeah, it's the fact that they're going to be reprinting Force of Will and Wasteland so far seems pretty exciting.
Yeah, that part. And, you know, hearing about it even before I saw the MSRP on, like, booster packs and everything, I figured it'd be the same, along the same lines as the Modern Masters.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that wasn't really surprising. Still more than I would like to pay for a pack of Magic cards, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, definitely. So, it seems like, so, I think they're not going to be reprinting any revised or reserved list cards.
No,
so.
No reserve list. That means no, I don't have it in front of me, but obviously no duels, so.
Yeah, so.
At least not in their traditional form. I mean, I've seen some people speculating maybe they'll, you know, they'll tweak them a little bit. You know, maybe kind of switch it up so they're duels, but they're, you know, some kind of drawback or whatever, but. Definitely none of the originals.
Yeah, what do you think the drawback might be? Because we already have a lot of. Well, the only true duels I can think of are the Shock Lands, the Tango Lands. Aren't there? Wait, no, Razor Verge Thicket. That's just like a check land. Wait, aren't there any other duels?
They're the fast lands, the Mirrodin.
Yeah.
Mirrodin, I guess the fast lands, the Razor Verge Thicket, and that. There's the Pain Lands, the Carpallusion Forest, and.
Well, I'm just thinking of ones that you can fetch for.
Oh.
I think it's only Shock Lands and. The Tanglelands, right? Is there any others besides the original duels?
No, I think that's it.
So I wonder if they're going to tweak it somehow to where it's still fetchable, but maybe it'll be something like the Tanglelands where you need one basic land out. I don't know. I mean, that'd be way better than having two, you know?
Right, and it'd be better than, you know, none at all. I really don't even know what direction they would go with that.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know if you've heard I don't know if you go on Reddit at all, but,
I try not to.
Yeah, it's, to me, it gets a little addicting, but it can be, sometimes it can be pretty bad, but, I don't know if you've seen some of the, there's that one account going around that supposedly spoiled the Eternal Masters before it came out, and he also predicted the Splinter Twin ban in Modern.
No, I mean, I'm aware of it. And I'm aware that there's a guy who's been pretty much dead on with a couple of things, but I haven't seen any of it firsthand.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so apparently he's and then there was the whole vendor list scandal that turned out to be completely fake.
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I'm kinda glad.
it was so funny because I'm on another podcast, Magic the Parenting, and we were recording last night, and one of the things we were actually going to talk about was, you know, the vendor leak thing. We're just going to touch on it a little bit.
Yeah.
And we didn't end up getting to it. And when we finished, we got on Twitter and we saw that it was all, you know.
Yeah. By the time you were done,
crap.
It's all fake.
Yeah. It's like, oh, well, we're glad we didn't get to that. So,
yeah, that's,
I didn't. Yeah.
That's not too bad. Yeah, one of the things that I've noticed that ever since they've announced the Eternal Masters, the dual land prices have been skyrocketing for some of them, especially the revised ones.
Yeah, anything blue, if you wanted to play anything blue in Legacy that required a dual land, the time to get those was like a month ago.
Yeah. Well,
that's just insane right now.
Yeah, luckily I'm slowly but surely building Legacy Elves, so I think Bayou is the only dual I really need.
Yeah, I think so.
And so
I have that deck, and I think that's the only duel I ran.
And so I figured I could try to run Overgrown Tomb for the time being, because Gaia's Cradle is going to run me a very pretty penny.
Right.
Before getting that, I think I'd rather get the Gaia Cradle before getting Bayou.
Yeah, and this probably isn't going to be a very popular opinion, but I really don't see a problem running the Shocklands over, you know, the duels, unless it's in a deck where you actually really need to monitor your life total.
Yeah, that's true. And especially, I guess, I'm not really that familiar with the Legacy metagame, but is Burn a popular deck?
I really couldn't say. I haven't played Legacy in a while. I actually sold out of it in my physical collection here a couple of months ago.
Oh, okay.
Because I was trying to balance Legacy and Modern and Standard, and I had to kind of base it on what was going on around me, and nobody played Legacy, so.
Yeah, see, that's what's sort of slowing me down from, because I was working on it a few months ago. I pretty much got all the creatures for my elf deck, and I got all the spells, and the last part was the lands, which are usually the most expensive, and then I finally finished my elf modern deck and been focusing on modern for the past few months. And just come to find out there's really no one that plays Legacy in my area.
Yeah, I ask people if they have Legacy decks, and they look at me like I have three heads. I'm like, oh, okay. But yeah, to go back to your question, I mean, I guess Burn could be a thing in Legacy. If it's not, I mean, it's always an option.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at, just going back, in case some people listening don't know what the dual lands are, they're lands that can tap for either color. There's, 10 of them, right?
Yeah.
And starting from the very first set of Magic, they were printed in Alpha, then in the second set, Beta, then Unlimited, was that the third set, official set, or?
Yep.
And then Revised, that was just sort of a reprint set, wasn't it? Or
more or less, yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure how many new cards there actually were between Revised and, or between Unlimited and Revised.
Yeah, because I know they have an actual fourth edition. Because I
know
would...
there are cards they left out, like any of the Moxes or the, you know, Power 9 or anything.
Yeah. Yeah, because I always get confused thinking that Revised was fourth edition, but there is an actual fourth edition core set. But, yeah, it looks like a lot of it's reprints from what I can tell, just briefly looking over it. But Duel Lands have been, especially now that Eternal Masters has been announced, Duel Lands have been highly sought after. And then there's that whole fear going around that, you know, Wizards is going to drop Legacy and make a new format called Eternal without the reserve list. So, I mean, I'm not too sure about that. I mean, it makes sense if they're never planning on ever reprinting from the reserve list again. You know, because then they can just start doing more Eternal Masters and, you know.
Right, I don't, like, but, I've heard a couple of things, like banning reserve list cards altogether, and then just, I'm not sure what I think about all that right now, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I mean, I guess we just have to wait and see, especially with what they're going to be reprinting, too.
Yeah, it's way too early to really speculate on anything right now.
Yeah. But I guess with that announcement, it brings it off to our main topic about finance. One of the things that, you know, you start to really learn, especially when you're going to start being a little bit competitive, going to Friday Night Magic or maybe some IQs or PPTQs, is you start to really learn about the financial side of Magic. You know, how much cards are worth, you know, how much you're actually going to be putting into this if you want to be competitive.
Oh, yeah.
And Yeah, like I was saying before, maybe I think I really do need to start getting a little bit more on the financial side of it, because it's, you know, because I'm so invested in standard, and now that I'm starting to get into modern, you know, modern is in a rotating format, so my deck, essentially, I can keep playing it as long as they don't ban it, but it's, but for me to be competitive, I'm always going to probably want to get the tier one deck that stands out, but,
Yeah. It's definitely going to be in your best interest to just keep on top of. You don't have to be like super super knowledgeable, like to the point of, you know, what's going to spike when. But I mean, just on the most basic level, just to save your ass if you're like trading or buying things, you need to have at least some general idea of what, you know, the cards are worth.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I guess to my first question for you is, what is Magic Finance? How would you describe it?
Magic Finance. Well, at its most basic, Magic Finance is making money from Magic cards. I like to think of it as making your collection work for you.
Okay.
Like, I think of it as an investment, and I'm sure a lot of other guys do, too. Like I said, I'm not as active as, you know, the guys over at Brainstorm Brewery or some of those other, you know, podcasts and stuff that do this stuff every day. I'm definitely not that, but...
So would you say you're more of a casual financer?
I'm definitely a casual finance guy. Like I said, it's completely, you know, self-serving for me. I'm not doing it to sell things to people. I'm doing it to sell things to people to make money. Am I making sense? I feel like I'm talking in a circle, but not really making sense.
No. I kind of get where you're at. It sounds like you've got into it to really self-sustain yourself in the game.
Yeah. I'm not doing it for profit. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Like, I'm basically breaking even with what I do. And I mean, that's fine for me. There are some people who will hear that and be like, oh, you're not doing it right. You know, I might not be doing it right. That's okay. I mean, it works for me.
Yeah, it sounds like you're trying. So saying that, you know, do you think it's, if you were to try to get a little bit more serious in it, do you think it's worth investing into Magic?
If I had the time and the money to invest in it, I think it could be. I can say that just, you know, from observation and my, you know, experience, it's a significant tax on your resources, like time, money, attention, you know, because there are so many things that you need to keep up on and so many, you know, metrics and variables to watch. And
so what would you need exactly to catch up on or watch? You know, what are some of the indicators that a card may go up or down?
Well, for me, what I use, I pay attention to tournament results. Like in the week leading up to a big tournament, you know, I'll read articles, you know, what pros are, you know, running, what they're talking about, you know, what looks strong, what doesn't look strong. Then I'll comb my collection for, you know, pieces of, you know, the various decks that I think will do well. And I'll kind of get them together in one spot so I can kind of monitor how they do throughout the week.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this isn't an every week thing. I pick and choose because obviously, you know, I have other things I need to do, and this isn't my full-time job, but that'll definitely go a long way, just keeping track of what's going on, like in the Pro Tour, GPs, SCG, Open Series, things like that. As far as websites I use, I'm a big fan of MTG Goldfish. That provides a lot. There's a MTG Price that I peruse occasionally. They have things like, you know, biggest gainers of the week, you know, cards that have gone up the most by percentage and by actual dollar amount, and like the same things for, you know, cards that have gone down.
Yeah.
So that's a good tool to kind of keep track of that and take stock of where you're at throughout the week. And based on that, I can decide what I'm gonna, what I'm gonna throw up on a TCG player and for how much, or throw something up on, Puka Trade.
Okay.
And whatnot.
Okay. Now that makes sense. So, you talking about what pro players are playing or what the tournament results are. I don't know. Are you familiar with trading on the stock market at all?
Nah, I don't touch stocks.
Well, I've recently started getting into stock market trading and doing a little bit of day trading here and there. I mean, nothing, no serious money or anything. It's just, maybe every time I get paid, I may spend, invest a couple hundred bucks here or there, something right. like that. And it's one of the things, when I was thinking of, the layout for this episode is, when you're looking at a stock, they usually have, a 5-year, how that stock has done in 5 years, 1 year, 1 week, how much it's gone up and down. And I see that, MTG price or MTG stocks or Goldfish has something similar. Even when you're trying to buy a card on TCG player, you can see the graph of how much it's gone up, how much it's gone down. But the one thing I've also noticed when you're investing in stocks is companies have what they call earnings reports. How much they've made in a quarter, how much they've made in a year, past 5 years, and they also have news reports of what the company is potentially doing. Magic cards don't really have that, do they? They don't really have
they don't, because Wizards doesn't really participate in the secondary market, and you've got so many quote unquote companies. Everyone selling their cards are basically a company. So that's.
Yeah. So with something like that, how it's not really regulated, what is there any kind of tips that you can give to when a card may or may not spike, or when it may or may not go up or down? A pro player obviously talking about it will give it a lot of light. What's that one card that I saw a bunch of buzz about before the Modern Pro Tour? Seance, I think.
Oh, God. Yeah.
How someone was going to pay, I'll pay you, $2,000 to play Seance or whatever it was. It was something dumb.
I think it was $40,000. I'll pay you $40,000 to play a Seance deck in friggin' Pro Tour.
Oh, God. But, just something like that. Do pro players make a card spike up a lot?
I mean, it can. Any kind of buzz is going to generate some, movement, depending on who it is, makes a difference, whether they're just, casually mention it in an article, or they actually, hypothesize, how it would do to build a, deck around it or something. That'll usually generate more buzz. And the more, people that pick up on that, the more traction it'll get. And eventually, if it's going to spike, then it will spike. But
what do you think indicates a card will plummet, when it just drastically drops down in price?
Well, I'm trying to think of a good example here. This probably isn't the best example, but Worldbreaker, when that first came out, which is a mythic from Oath of the Gatewatch.
Yeah, it looks like when... No, that's all right. No, it looks like when it first came out, I'm looking at TCG Player, it looks like it was about $3 when it first came out.
Yeah, it started low. I don't know what the pre-order was offhand, but...
Yeah.
It, in the weeks, I think, leading up to... the Pro Tour, it caught some buzz, so it started going up. I think it got up to around $10, I want to say. I sold mine around $8, okay. And that was shortly after the Pro Tour. But it didn't really do anything noteworthy there, so it kind of made its way down.
Yeah, that's true. So what do you think made it go up? Was it just hype, purely hype, or?
You know, a lot of the time that's what it is, especially when a card is unproven like that.
Okay.
I mean, because they really have nothing to base it on. I mean, a couple of people, you know, deck building with it and brainstorming and, you know, but you don't know how it's going to do until, you know, the first tournament. And it's either it does really well and then everyone's like, holy shit, I got to have this card, or it's not, doesn't do that well and everyone's like, eh, whatever.
Yeah, until it does well when another rotation happens. And
right. And that's, I'll share a story. And people who follow me on Twitter will probably, like, people who pay attention to my stuff on Twitter might remember this. I know Jason Lee, I don't know if he listens to this, but he rags on me about this fairly often. I was really big into See the Unwritten.
Oh, yeah, I remember that card.
Which I should be able.
Yeah, that's the Khanza Tarkir one, right?
Yeah. Hold up, I'll just spout off what it does really quick. And okay. I thought this card was, you know, friggin' awesome when I first saw it. So I'm like, oh yeah, man, I'm gonna get into this card because it's so cheap. Yeah, it's a from Khanza Tarkir. It's a mythic sorcery, 4/2 green. Reveal the top 8 cards of your library. You may put a creature card from among them onto the battlefield. Put the rest into your graveyard. And it also has Ferocious, which says if you control the creature with power 4 or greater, you may put 2 creature cards onto the battlefield instead of 1.
Yeah, and on paper, that's not a bad card.
On paper, that sounds freaking sweet. And then especially when Battle for Zendikar was spoiled, everyone's like, oh man, Eldrazi are coming back. You know, this might be really good in an Eldrazi deck. You know, Eldrazi ramp, yeah, See the Unwritten, blah, blah, blah. Awesome. Beat face. Cool. So I'm like, yeah, I'll give you some of these. And it didn't do anything. Like, it spiked hard, like, right around when I think Battle for Zendikar came out. I think the non-foils got up to around $7 or $8. So I sold a bunch. I sold a bunch at that price when I had picked them up at around $2 to $3 each. And then after that, like, month following the release, it just kind of dropped, and now it's back to, like, you can get it for a dollar on TCG Player. So I have, like, a box of 70 of these cards sitting.
Oh, man.
Which I'll hang on to these because I'm stubborn, but I still have hope that, you know, See the Unwritten will see the day where it's actually good and does something. So,
well, you got a few months.
Mm-hmm.
You got a few months until it's rotated out. I'm not sure if it'll see much modern.
Modern, play. Maybe not. Legacy, I would think it'd see more in Legacy than Modern, but I mean, it depends.
Yeah.
Modern's just so fast right now.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I went to Monday Night Modern this week, and like I said, I only have my Elf deck right now. I'm almost done with my Grixis Delver deck. Just need to get 2 Snapcasters. And but yeah, everybody's playing either Abzan Company or Eldrazi or Affinity. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, I'm so sick of seeing those 3 decks.
Yeah, I mean, the Abzan Company is at least a little bit refreshing, even though it's a pain in the ass to play against.
Yeah, it's different.
Yeah, but Affinity and Eldrazi, it's just straight beatdown, and it's just, especially Eldrazi, its elves are just not fast enough at all for Eldrazi.
Yeah, I've had very limited luck. I play, I've been playing Boggles, whatever, the green-white hexproof.
Yeah.
And I've gotten lucky a couple of times with that, but it's, I mean, even that, it's not really great against it consistently.
Yeah, it's, you know, I finally did beat Boggles for the first time ever playing Elves. But then again, I think my opponent just drew bad, so. But yeah, that Boggles is a pretty good deck, though. I've been looking at it. It's pretty cheap, it looks like, too.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. I mean, if you run Horizon Canopy in it, it's going to run you quite a bit more. But
yeah, I know.
I took those out. I mean, they never did anything for me really. So I sold them and just moved on.
Yeah, that's probably the better thing. Well, let's see. Let me see some other questions here. So, you know, how would someone new, you know, say you're a new player and wanting to get in more competitive and then you find out the financing, how would someone new jump into this? You know, what would you recommend for someone new wanting to get into the finance side?
Read a lot. God, I don't want to feel like I'm name dropping, but I mean, there are definitely some writers that they should, you know, check out.
And you can name drop. It's fine.
I'm blanking. I mean, I know who they are. Travis Allen is a good one. Zimmet, does some good stuff. Doug Johnson over at, I think he's still over at, like Quiet Speculation, or maybe he went somewhere else. I don't know. But there are three guys that I read a lot. Frost, I can only think of him by his Twitter handle.
Okay.
He does some stuff. Saffron Olive doesn't do a whole lot of the finance stuff, but he builds janky decks and plays with them, so I like that.
Yeah, the only thing with those that he does is as soon as he releases a deck, all the prices go up on them.
Yeah, that's the only bad thing. Like, I see a deck, I'm like, yeah, it's awesome. Oh, that card is going to go up.
Yeah. Like, I've tried to build some of them on Magic Online, and just as soon as I do, it's like, oh, it's only $5 or 5 tickets? Not anymore. Yeah, it's like 20 tickets.
That's the aspect of it that I don't like. And it's not so much like there's a difference, and you have to draw a distinction between, you know, finance guys and just like speculators, because there's a difference. And the people who just go, like, I can see buying, you know, 10, maybe even 20 copies of a card you think is going to do well. That's cool. But if you're one of these guys going on, like TCG player, and buying 400 copies of a card, like, it's obvious that you're intentionally trying to make the price spike. And that's, I think that's shitty. I don't agree with that at all.
Yeah, it's a pain in the butt, especially, you know, like you say, you're just trying to buy a card just so you actually want to play it. And
yeah.
You know, didn't something similar like that happen to Jace Vryn's Prodigy, the Origins one? Like, when he first started getting popular, wasn't there like a buyout on him?
I'm not sure. I'll admit, I slept really, really hard on Flip Jace. I was not having any of it. I took one look at it. I'm like, eh, whatever. This is gonna suck. And that was all. And I played one game against it, and it wrecked me. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I figured I'd pick up a couple of copies. Nope. $50. I'm like,
Yeah, I was happy I got them at, what were they, like $14, $15 a piece, my playset. Oh, man. As soon as it started spiking up, everybody wanted to trade with them. I'm like, nope, I'm not trading them away.
Yeah.
No, but... Yeah, I remember something similar happened to Hangerback Walker. What was it, the Magic World Cup or something, when it got really popular?
Oh, yeah.
And it spiked up to like $20, and now it's back down to like, looks like $6 or $7.
Yeah, it's where it should be now.
Yeah.
But
it's,
I mean,
still
everyone,
a good, it's...
everyone was playing them, though. Like, people were literally cramming them in every deck. Like, whether it made sense,
yeah,
or
yeah, you're
not.
Right. Yeah, I remember that. And now it's just... I mean, I use it mainly for sideboard if I have to.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so where do you actually sell your cards? I know you mentioned TCG Player and Puka Trade.
Yes.
Do you ever sell them at a local game store or anything? Or?
I don't. just because I don't go out enough to really, you know, I'm not up there enough to really warrant, you know, even if they had the space, you know, like trying to rent, like, you know, space in a card case. But I'd basically just do TCG player and, you know, Puka Trade if I'm not looking for money. Puka Trade, I'll do smaller stuff just to kind of, you know, flip's the right word, but just convert cards I'm not using into cards that I need or, you know, could potentially serve me in the future. But if I'm, like, if a card is spiking and I want, you know, I want to offload a card, then, you know, TCG player is usually where I do it.
Okay. And do they, what are their fees like for when they take out? Are they better than eBay?
I think they're slightly better than eBay. I mean, they're still bad, but I mean, they aren't really, I don't know the figure offhand, but they take out some percentage.
Yeah, I guess I got to make their money somehow.
Well, yeah. You gotta keep the lights on.
Yeah, pretty much. Another question, how do you determine what cards are a fad and which one are going to hold its value? I know that's sort of a loaded question because it's...
It seems like any person on any given day can make a bad card good. So, I mean, it's... I don't know. I try to go with my gut. Like me, you know, I've been playing for a while. I'm not the best player, but I like to think that I have some kind of handle on what's going on with the cards, you know, when I look at them. So, I mean, I can generally tell if something's going to be decent or if it's just garbage.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on the player. And...
Okay. So, when you're looking at cards to buy into, are you mainly looking for its value within its life in standard or possible modern or legacy implications it can have?
I try to look at everything just because I think if you just look at a card in a vacuum of one format, then you could entirely miss, you know, some kind of potential, you know, it would have in, you know, modern or legacy or standard or whatever. You know, you've seen it. A card kicks ass in standard, and then it rotates out, and it's just nothing.
Hey, Goblin, you know, Rabble Master.
Yes, yeah. that ticked me off so bad because it was so good in standard. I'm like, oh, man, all right, I'm going to make this work in, you know, legacy goblins, and it's going to be awesome, and it was not awesome.
I know, it's sad.
And conversely, there's cards that don't do jack crap in standard, and then when it rotates out, like, it wreaks havoc in freaking, like, Treasure Cruise, you know?
It's
decent in standard, but it just, you know, it got banned how quickly? And was it modern it got banned in?
Yeah, it got banned in modern, a couple months after cons came out?
Yeah. So, I mean, it usually depends on what cards are around it that can, you know, make it better.
So when a prominent card is going to be reprinted, say the Khan's Fetchlands are a really good example. Now, I don't know if you have any Onslaught fetches or anything like that, but if something like that could be that expensive, like the Onslaught fetches were pretty expensive. When the cons fetches were announced, is that something like you want to sell your onslaughts right away because you know the price is going to go down?
Yeah, that's the general thinking. Like a reprint that big, you know, usually at the first, I want to say when they were first, the set was announced and it was first kind of speculated that they might be reprinting the fetches. I know the fetches started going up.
And the original ones?
The original ones, yeah. And I noticed this, I noticed this more prominently with the Painlands. Like, personally, I I noticed the Apocalypse Painlands, especially the foils, they went up ridiculously high when
Which
they were.
are the Apocalypse ones? Are those the enemy colored ones or the Allied?
The ones that were reprinted in M15.
Oh, okay.
Land War Waste and the Shivan Reef and things like that.
Okay.
So those skyrocketed. The foils were ridiculous. I think the Shivan Reef foil got up to $40 at one point.
Oh, wow.
And they were like $10 previously. Yeah, it was nuts. But I think that's what happens usually, because there are some people who like the older printings of cards. And the general thinking is sell out now, because eventually, you know, the supply will be plentiful enough. You'll be able to pick them up for, you know, cheaper, and you'll make some profit off of the ones you sold.
Okay. Now that kind of makes sense. Now, is the reverse for that true at all? Like, if there's going to be a prominent reprint, do you want to start buying up some of maybe the older copies and possibly try to sell them on the high end, or is there nothing really like that?
If you can, because I think the window for that is so small, though. Like, you really, really need to be in tune with what's going on. Because if you wait until you see the card moving up, you're already too late.
Oh, okay.
That's the general rule. That's what I've heard time and time again. If you're seeing it spike, it's past the time you should have bought it. Yeah, you might still be able to, you know, turn a profit from it, but it's going to be minimal.
So I guess that goes back to, how do you determine if a card's going to spike? Is that just going back to, you know, your gut feeling, or?
Yeah, I mean, gut feeling. You know, the websites that monitor the, you know, the trends like the MTG price and the MTG Goldfish. You know, those are big with kind of predicting what's going to happen. But yeah, it's the whole finance thing is so delicate, I guess. There's so much guesswork and like so much research that, you know, you need to do to be really successful with it.
Jesus, it sounds a lot more volatile than what I've been reading up on the stock market. Because, like I was saying before, at least you can look at earnings reports and see how a company's doing.
Yeah.
This is just sort of like, hey, this card may spike, so I'm going to buy 100 copies of it.
Yeah, and then it might not have spiked, but since you bought 100 copies, that might make the price go up. Like, it's so...
Oh, that's funny. Has that ever happened to you where you maybe bought... You think a card's going to go up, you bought 100 copies of it, and then other people are thinking, oh, crap, why is this being bought out? Have you seen that happen? Or
I've seen it happen. I can't recall a specific card, but I've definitely seen that happen. The most of any one card I've ever purchased at one time, it was for... Draka Mystic, which I believe it's Born of the Gods. A little one blue merfolk that basically fate seals you and your opponent.
Oh yeah, I remember that card. Yeah. I thought that was a really good card. I had that in my in Soul Artifact deck, because I made a when M15 first dropped, I put her in it for, like, control purposes.
Yeah, yeah, I thought it was really good, too. So I went to Star City, and I bought 60 foil copies at, like, 50 cents each.
Oh, man.
It didn't. I mean, I'm actually screwing with it now. I'm testing it in Modern Merfolk, see if maybe it can do something in that, like, out of the sideboard, maybe, but...
Yeah, I always thought that was a really good control card. At least when I was playing it in Standard. I haven't tried it in Modern or anything like that. But that's pretty funny that
yeah, but so,
that you mentioned that, because I really like that card.
Yeah, but I've never really bought like hundreds and hundreds of one card, just, you know, because I think it might go up. That was the only thing.
So instead of just single cards, I noticed some people will hold on to sealed product too. Like they'll buy boxes or cases of sealed product. And what we mean by sealed product is by booster boxes that hold the 36 packs of boosters, or cases which have, what, six boxes, I think?
Usually six, yeah.
Do you do any of that, buy sealed product and hold on to it in hopes that it'll go up, or?
I have zero impulse. So the longest a booster box stays in my possession untouched is probably a few hours.
Oh, okay.
So I do have a set of the 2014 Commander decks. Is it 2014 or 2013? It's whatever year had the Mindseize deck with the True Name Nemesis in it.
Oh, yeah, that's the 2013.
Yeah, I have one each of those that I haven't touched. But other than that, nope. Zero self-control. Okay.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I usually buy at least a box every time a new set comes out, and I really need to stop doing that because it's ended up just being a waste of money, because it'll make me want to build like 5 million decks.
Because
I have that problem of, especially when a new rotation happens, I'll get so excited about, ooh, I can do this, this, and that, and start buying individual pieces for it, and then end up only playing one or two decks for the whole rotation anyway.
Yeah, I have a really bad problem with seeing a deck I like and then getting it maybe three quarters of the way built and then just abandoning it. Like, I have so many deck boxes with half a deck in it.
I started building
and then just abandoned.
Oh, man, you sound just like me. I know exactly. It's I've gotten better. The only things that are like half built now are like my Modern and Legacy decks.
Mm-hmm.
Because I actually do have an actual completed Legacy deck, but it's probably cost me about $40. It's mono green Stompy.
Okay.
Which, you know, during testing, I've actually been able to beat, like, full-blown Merfolk with it. And what was the other one? I think I beat Elves with it one time, too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but it's a terrible deck, honestly. But it confuses people. It has, oh, what's the one card? Hold on, let me pull it up. Because I only run 14 lands in it, but I use, I don't know if you've heard of the card Land Grant.
Land Grant, yeah. Yeah.
It's, just for people who don't know, it's, came out in Mercadian Masks, and, it's a one colorless and one green. If you have no land cards in hand, you may reveal your hand instead of paying land grants mana costs and search your library for a forest card and put it into your hand. So, you know, when I was playing that, you know, card at first, you know, to me that doesn't seem to be a very meta card in Legacy. So people were just kind of confused as to what I was doing. Because especially in my area, no one plays mono green Stompy, so they've never seen it. But it was fun to beat a, you know, full-blown elf and merfolk deck with it.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
But, all right, so no sealed product. Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. As soon as I get a sealed product, I'm just, oh, I got to open it, you know. I can't hold on to it very well.
Speaking of not being able to hold on to things, can we take a brief pause?
Sure.
Okay, you can edit this out, right? I just need to go to the bathroom, like, really, really bad.
Yeah, no problem. I can edit this out.
All right, I'll be right back.
All right, cool. All right, so we're back. Probably in post-production land when you're hearing this on iTunes, that little edit probably was going to be, what, 1 second or so? Not even. So, I guess the last financial question I have is, if you're a new person wanting to get into this, what do you think is a realistic investment amount to start into it? Or before we get into the investment amount, what would you recommend, doing sealed product or individual cards if you're first starting out?
Like first starting out with the financial aspect of it?
Yeah, if you're really wanting to get into it.
I would, depending on the size of your collection, I'd try to start with what I already had. Just going through, you know, literally, you know, it'll take a while, but literally going through every card you have and looking up, see, you know, what it's worth. If you can, look up the history on it, but you're going to want to have an idea of what, you know, what you have and what that's worth. Like I said, I can't speak too much to the sealed product end of it because I don't do that. But
okay.
From what I hear, you're better off if you're going to buy like sealed product, you buy it and you sit on it for years even. Because obviously it's not going to go up once, you know, that set is in rotation, but you know, once it's out of print, like an Innistrad box right now is, I don't even know, 300? Not even
yeah,
sure.
That sounds about right. Yeah, 300 sounds about right. So going off of
they're
what do you think?
They're definitely more long-term investment.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. So you're saying that sealed product would be more of a long-term investment.
Yeah.
Individual cards maybe short-term.
Mm-hmm. Individual cards a lot more fluid. A lot more changes with them. A lot more frequently. So.
Okay. You know, that actually brings me another question, speaking of individual cards. Going back to the stock market, they have something what they call penny stocks.
Mm-hmm.
Stocks that are, most of the time, they're considered anything a dollar or less.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's some stocks that are, you know, maybe a tenth of a penny, something like that, and you can buy a lot of shares and hopes that if it goes up to maybe a dollar amount, you can just sell it all off and make a quick buck.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything like that equivalent in Magic?
Yeah.
Like a penny stock?
They're actually referred to as penny stocks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There are cards on the cheaper side that, you know, could have potential, and you basically just stick them in a box and save them for a rainy day.
Now, the only card I can think of off the top of my head that may have been one, Monastery Swiss Spear. Was that a lot of money when it first came out?
I don't think so.
Because I know now it's like up to, what, $2-3 or something?
Yeah,
or?
I think maybe it was a dollar, like around when it first came out. I don't know what it pre-ordered for. I know it started higher than other uncommons, but it definitely wasn't, you know, $3 when it was first, you know, printed.
Yeah. Would that be an example of a penny stock, so to say?
I think so. A card that I really like, it's not really under the radar, but Storm Chaser Mage that just came out in Oath of the Gatewatch. It's the 1 blue, 1 red, 1/2 flyer with prowess, I believe.
Yeah, it's 1/3.
1/3.
I like to think of it as Monastery Swiss Spear's older brother.
Yep. Definitely. That is something that I'm actively like trading for, just to keep them and stick them in a box. I mean, the foils are already, what, $15 last time I checked?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm looking on TCG Player right now. That's about right. Damn.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that reminds me of the time when I pulled a foil Treasure Cruise when it first came out. I sold it right away for $20.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm just like, I'm not going to use this, so whatever. But, okay, that makes sense. And I guess the last question is what I was about to say. What's a realistic investment amount to start into this? What do you think you should have to set aside? Like, how much money do you think you should have to start off with?
That's such a hard question to answer. Just because it is so subjective, like from person to person, and you know what you're actually looking to get out of it. I'll just throw a random number out there. If you have $100 that you can just take and, you know, devote time and, you know, do some research, look at trends and everything, and just get $100 worth of some cards that you think might do well. Potentially it could do very well for you. Conversely, it could do nothing for you too. So, I mean, it's highly speculative, this whole thing.
Yeah, that's what I've come to learn. It's
because you're basing it off information you don't know yet, ultimately. So
in a big way, it's like a really big gamble, so to say.
Exactly.
Okay. That sounds good. All right, man. Well, that's pretty much all the questions I have for this. So I guess to get near the end of this, I heard that, you know, you've started a podcast of your own. You want to talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's called Magic the Parenting. It's a podcast that I started up with Andrew, who is No Strange Names on Twitter, and Aaron, who is Aaron's Art Stuff. They're both on Twitter. It stemmed from a Twitter conversation, actually. It was originally going to be a podcast where me and Andrew just kind of argue with each other. And then Aaron offered to moderate because, as Andrew had said, Magic Community didn't really need another podcast with two dudes. So, you know, she offered to moderate, and then it kind of happened that we're all parents. So we're like, hey, you know, we're all parents. Why don't we do this? And then Magic the Parenting got thrown out, and then next thing you know, we're recording, and we actually recorded our first episode last night, and it went up early this morning.
That's awesome. Yeah, I saw it was on Shout Engine, right?
It's on there. We actually just this evening, we are going to be hosted on cardconfidants.com.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not sure if we're going to just be, you know, doing it there, or we'll have it over on Shout Engine too. I mean, I guess it couldn't hurt to have it in a couple of different places.
Well, I mean, because I noticed you're also trying to get on iTunes. If you're, if Card Confidant offers you the RSS feed, you know, that's only one less place you gotta, you know, host your podcast to.
Right, right. So yeah, there's still a lot up in the air, figuring that out.
Yeah, so it sounds pretty cool. So how many kids do you have?
I have one. His Zachary, he is 4. And he's one kid, but he is definitely a handful.
So have you got him playing Magic yet?
No, not yet. he knows all the basic land types. And he'll carry around some of my cards from time to time, but he's nowhere near being ready to learn how to play yet. So it'll come.
No, it'll come. I've got a 6-year-old and a 12-year-old myself, and they're both daughters, Zoe and Jazzy, and I've built them little dual decks. Right, they're just really basic decks to get them to learn.
Yeah.
Elves versus goblins.
Awesome.
And they always make me be the goblins. It's like, I'd rather be elves and kick your butts that way, but all right. No, because they love the elves because they're really so cool. Pretty and beautiful. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so it's been a challenge, you know, trying to juggle it all, wanting to, you know, go. I try to go to F&M every Friday night, and I've been trying, especially this year, try to go to more higher level tournaments, you know, just trying to juggle that and being a parent and husband and full-time job. So I'm sure you understand.
Yeah.
It can be pretty crazy.
All too well.
Yeah. But, all right, man. Are there any other plugs you want to throw out or anything like that?
If you're on Twitter and want to give me a shout, follow me. I am at Durdlewitz, DURDLEWITZ. Good, I spelled it right. I always think I'm going to spell it wrong when I have to spell it out. But yeah, I'm on Twitter. That would be the best way to get a hold of me.
Oh, and I just noticed, I was looking on my phone, that Magic the Parenting is now on iTunes, and
yes.
I just subscribed to it.
Nice, awesome.
It looks like did you just get approved today, or?
Yep.
All right, awesome. Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to listen to it, because I listen to all my podcasts in my car. I have like an hour commute drive, so that's where I get all my podcasting in. All right, great. And yeah, I'd just like to thank you for coming on. We'll have to do this again, do something else, or, you know, talk about more finance stuff or just talk about Magic, because I had a good time. Yeah, so we'll just see. And you can find me at Zubatron. That's Zubatron. And also the Magic with Zuby Twitter account is at Magic with Zuby. That's Zuby. And you can find Magic at Magic with Zuby on Shout Engine and iTunes. And MTGcast also hosts the podcast as well. It's a network of Magic the Gathering podcasters. And they have a lot of good other shows on there, too, that everybody can check out. So, all right, Bryce, anything else before we get going?
That's it, Mr. Zuby.
All right, well, great. Well, I just want to thank you again for coming, and make sure everybody checks out Magic the Parenting, and have a good night, everybody.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me. It was fun, and everyone have a good night.
Yeah, we'll have to do this again. All right, see ya.